as you're reading before the sermon will be Proverbs chapter 4, verse 20. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart. For they are life to those who find them and health to all their body. Watch over for your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth and devious speech far from you. Let your eyes look directly ahead, and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. Watch the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right nor the left. Turn your foot from evil.
You don't have to read much about medicine to see this term that I've got flashed up here on the board. You read almost any kind of medical article on the board, it seems like somebody has to throw in the word holistic. Holistic basically means kind of a multifaceted approach to something. In philosophy, it's characterized by a comprehension of the parts of something as intimately interconnected and explicable only by reference to the whole. Sounds fancy, but basically it means you got to look at everything instead of just one or two things. In medicine, it's a very similar concept, characterized by the treatment of the whole person, taking into account mental and social factors rather than just the physical symptoms of a disease. Lots of references to holistic medicine. The word holistic, though, I think is an excellent way to think about our obedience to God. Jesus said in Mark chapter 12, Jesus answered, the foremost commandment is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, and with all of your soul, and with all of your mind, and with all of your strength. And of course, here he was quoting from Deuteronomy chapter 6. This was called the Shema. It was something that Jews recited every day of their lives. The idea of wholehearted obedience to God, and not just the whole heart, the whole body, the whole mind, everything about you. I remember, maybe 15, 20 years ago, I heard a lot of people use the phrase, with every fiber of my being. And that's exactly what obedience should be. It should involve every aspect of your life, your mental faculties, your physical faculties, inner, outer, emotional, spiritual, intellectual, all of that goes along with our obedience to God. Well, tonight I want us to look at a text from the book of Proverbs, and I want us to talk about the anatomy of wisdom. The text that we just read, Proverbs 4, verses 20 through 27, makes several references to body parts. And that's one way that you periodically see in a passage in the Bible to emphasize the idea that we are completely involved in God. You'll see references to body parts. What you have in Proverbs 4 at the end of the chapter is a series of exhortations to really watch out what you're doing with your life, but it frames it with anatomical language. So we're going to look at what Solomon has to say tonight about the anatomy of wisdom. The first nine chapters of the book of Proverbs is the idea of wisdom. It's just in praise of wisdom. It's a series of poems, one after the other, that in some way says wisdom is really important and you need to go after it with everything you got. Well, when you get to chapter 4, you have a section that you could label more fatherly advice. It begins, chapter 4, Hear, O sons, the instruction of the father. 23 times in Proverbs and 15 times in the first nine chapters, a section will begin, Hear, my son, or Hear, O sons. And basically, it's the idea that it's a father speaking to his son, giving him fatherly advice. A few weeks ago, we looked at a section from Proverbs chapter 3 that had the same kind of language. So here again, in chapter 4, you've got a series of fatherly admonitions. In fact, all three sections of Proverbs 4 begin this way. Proverbs 4, verse 1, he begins a section on the value of wisdom. You should heed your father's advice, he says, because your father is full of wisdom. I've been telling my kids that for years, but anyway, I'm just quoting Solomon. But anyway. he says, heed your father's instructions because they are full of wisdom, and if you have wisdom, then you'll have long life and other benefits. The middle part of the chapter changes the imagery. It reminds me a lot of Psalm chapter 1, where there are two ways. There's the right way and the wrong way, the way of wickedness, the way of righteousness. So in verses 10 through 19 of Proverbs 4, he presents the two ways. He says, now, if you'll follow this way, good things will happen. If you follow that way, bad things will happen. Then he ends the chapter with sort of a way of combining both of the previous sections. And what he does here is he has a series of very strong exhortations to be diligent in the way that you pursue the wisdom of God. And in this section, he uses this idea of anatomy. He's talking about the whole man, wholehearted, whole person obedience. There's three sections in verses 20 through 27. First of all, there's a section that deals with what I'll call inner anatomy, the idea that these are the receptive organs. Notice in verses 20 through 22, he talks about the ears, he talks about the eyes, and he talks about the heart. So be careful what you take into your mind or what you take into yourself or your body. The central part of this section is verse 23. Now, he introduces the heart earlier, but the main exhortation in this section is verse 23. It's the heart of the matter. It's the heart of human life. It's the center of everything. Guard your heart, he says, with all diligence. And then the last section, he moves to outer anatomy. This is the organs that act upon what the heart tells them to do. And so he talks about, again, several body parts that carry out the commands of the heart. So again, he uses the idea of our anatomy. He gives us an anatomy lesson, but he's not concerned so much about the body as much as he is how we think about our service to God. So let's look then at this business of this anatomy. Notice in the text, he says, my son, give attention to my words, incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all of their body. When he's talking about this inner anatomy, the receptive organs, he admonishes them in two ways. First, there's a positive kind of admonition. He says, pay attention to my words, incline your ear to my saying. So this is what you must do. I like that second phrase there in verse 20. Incline your ear. Literally, that means to bend the ear. You ever do that? Eh? Someone says something to you and say, I didn't hear that. Why do you do that? You do that because it literally enhances your hearing. And what he says is, you need to bend your ear toward wisdom. You need to bend your ear toward the will of God. When it comes to God's will, we need to walk around like this, ready to listen, ready to take in the instructions. But then he expresses it in a negative way by saying, do not let them depart from your sight. So the ears are involved and the eyes are involved. Don't let them get so far away that you can't see them. And then he introduces the idea of the heart. Keep them in the midst of your heart. And then in verse 22, there is a statement of motivation. For they are life to those who find them and health to all their body. Those two things appear quite a bit in the book of Proverbs, life and health. There are, I think, some physical benefits, some material benefits to serving the Lord. Now, it's not a health and wealth gospel thing that if you serve the Lord, you're going to be fabulously rich. But let me tell you this, if you live a godly lifestyle, you're doing yourself a favor. You know, if you don't go out and get drunk every night, if you don't go out and smoke cigarettes all day long, if you don't go out and chase women, if you don't go out and sleep around with everything that breathes, if you don't go out and squander your money on worthless pursuits, if you don't do all of those things, you know what? You're probably going to live longer. You're probably going to have a much healthier life. You're going to have a lot better life. And he doesn't back away from that. He says, this is life, it's health. It will give you all the things that you need to be prosperous. And then, as I said, he's got this list of the outer anatomy as well. The key idea is right in the middle. A lot of times when you're in the Old Testament, particularly in poetic sections, if you're in the Psalms, so found to be in one of the prophets, and you'll read a poem. Very, very often, not always, but very, very often, the most important idea is in the middle of everything. And that's how this little poem works. Verse 23 is really the key. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. So the whole idea in this passage is watchfulness. Be alert, be watchful, be careful what you do. So let's spend then the rest of our time looking at his invitation to watch out. First of all, he tells us to watch our ears. He says, give attention, bend your ear. What you listen to affects your life. You like listening to music? You ever find yourself humming your favorite song? Maybe it's a hymn. Maybe it's an old rock and roll song. I was in band for a lot of years, and I love all kinds of music. I really like rock and roll. I like jazz. I like classical stuff. And most days when I'm in my office, I got some kind of music going in the background. I love listening to him. I love listening to all of that. For me, it soothes the beast. Gets me calmed down. Helps me concentrate a little bit. But what we listen to can have a powerful effect on our life. Not just music, but what about the advice that you listen to? You ever listen to bad advice? Someone said, well, here's what you need to do, and you're sitting there, okay, yeah, that sounds good. And you go and you do it, and then you think, why did I listen to that? Good advice or bad advice can really shape your life. Sometimes it's good or bad advice about something more or less inconsequential. Sometimes it's good or bad advice about really important things. I've known people who would listen to anybody except someone godly. They'll listen to a TV star, they'll listen to an athlete, they'll listen to a politician, they'll listen to a celebrity, they'll listen to a reporter on TV. They'll believe anything they see in the media, but then you show them the Word of God. Well, you know, that book's real old. Well, this book has outlived all of us. Maybe there's some value to it. Be careful about the advice you listen to. Be careful about the philosophies and the religions that you listen to. Some people can't get enough of the latest bookstore types of religion. You walk in the book. I love bookstores. It's sad that they're disappearing at the rate that they are. But anyway, you go to the bookstore, and anymore, the religion and philosophy section just gets bigger and bigger, and most of it is not worth the paper it's printed on. But boy, people buy that stuff. And if someone professes to be some wise spiritual sage, people are all over that. Be careful, Solomon says, what you listen to. Be careful about the opinions you listen to. Be careful of all of that. Remember, he said, bend your ear, but not to what the world has to say. You bend your ear toward godly wisdom. So watch your ears. He says in verse 21, second, first part of it, do not let them depart from your sight. Watch your eyes. Your ears are for listening. Your eyes are for seeing. It's amazing how much stuff you take in visually. It really fascinated me, Mark, when we started having kids. I remember we asked the doctor, I think when Hannah was born, we just see her looking all around, just watching, just their eyes constantly move. We said, so what exactly can she see? And I was stunned. The doctor said, she sees everything that you do. She sees everything exactly as you do. But here's the problem. Children don't have a way of interpreting it. They look up, there's something, they don't know that that's a light. They don't know that that's a wall. After a while, they start figuring out this is daddy and that's mommy. But they don't have an interpretive framework. So part of the challenge of raising kids is get them to look at the right things and interpret things in the right way. But you and I see thousands of things, probably tens of thousands of things every day. And those things affect our lives. How many of you have to read the newspaper or watch the news in the morning? For me, I like seeing just a little bit of it in the morning. It helps me kind of get my bearings. I want to see it. I want to see it on the page. I want to see it on the screen. Sometimes I will hear something on the radio as I'm driving you know, take somebody to school or drive them to the office, I'll hear a news article. And for me, when I get that, I want to see it. So I'll click on Google and find it and figure out what's going on. I want to see it. I want to take in that information. Your eyes are a portal not only of knowledge, but of values and opinions and all kinds of things. We read or we see things on TV, some of it good, some of it bad. Back in the 1950s, when the TV industry was merging, I can't remember who said it, but he was the director of the Federal Communications Commission, and at the time he described TV as a vast wasteland. And that's not a bad description today. Now, the thing about a wasteland is there's always a few things out there that are worth looking at. They may be few and far between. They may be hard to find. But that's a lot of what's on television. I think the Internet is an even vaster wasteland. There's some good stuff on there, but there's some bad stuff. You have to watch what you watch. Our eyes can be portals for lust. That's sad. When you see things and you let your mind dwell on them and suddenly you have this desire to possess something that isn't yours. In sexual terms, it's lust. In property terms, it's materialism and covetousness. Our eyes take in this stuff and we let them dwell in our minds. Think about how much your eyes, what you see, determines your ideals of beauty and culture. One of the concerns that child psychologists have had for a long time is how here in the United States, the media, TV, movies, magazines, portray beauty. You think of the models you see on the fronts of magazines. You think about the TV stars that you see. You don't see obese TV stars. You don't see obese women models. You don't see young teenage stars who are obese or ugly or hairs out of place. No, you don't see that. You see an ideal of beauty that nobody can reach. And yet, how many kids feed on that every day and think that's what beauty is? You have to watch your eyes because what comes in the eyes are a portal for so many things. We're often tempted by our eyes. Remember, I think I mentioned this morning. John spoke of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. What we see entices us. James, I think, had that in mind over in the book of James in chapter 1. When he was talking about temptation, he said, "Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. But each one," I love this verse, "each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed." That word enticed basically is the idea that there's a distraction that gets your attention and you have to have, we have a dog around our house, Bo. He is so easily distracted. You get him outside and he's out there and you're horsing around with him. He sees a squirrel and he's off. He's enticed by that squirrel. He just catches a glimpse of it. A bird flies by. He's all over it. He just sees it, and he's gone. This word enticed, a good illustration of this is what fishermen do with lures. You drop a lure in the water, and it's amazing. Fish like shiny things, or some fish do. Some fish, and if they just catch a glimpse of something shiny, they're off, and you got them. It's allurement. It's visual appeal. So Solomon knew what he was talking about when he said, you watch your eyes. That's where so much stuff comes into your mind and your heart and your life. Watch your ear, watch what you hear, watch what you see. Most of all, he says, and again, this is in the middle of the text, watch your heart. The heart is simply the center of man's being. It's not so much the chest heart as much as it is the head heart. Sometimes it's the seat of emotion. Sometimes the Bible uses it as the seat of our will. Sometimes it's pretty much equivalent to our conscience. Sometimes it's the decision-making apparatus. Sometimes it just symbolizes man. You shall love the Lord with all of your heart. I think with all of yourself is what Moses was saying. You watch your heart, and he says, for from it flow the springs or the issues of life. Everything that is important first first goes into your heart and then it comes out of your heart. That's why watching the heart is so important. He said that the heart is used for making decisions. He says, keep your heart or guard your heart. Some think that that idea here may be the idea of memorization. If you flip over to Proverbs 7, verse 1, the same word keep is used there. My son, keep my words and treasure my commandments within you. And then back in our text in verse 23, watch over your heart with all diligence. Keep your heart with all diligence. Diligence. The idea that you are vigilant in what you do, you pay attention to the details of your life. You pay attention to your surroundings. You pay attention to what's going on every day. Diligence is hard. I don't know about you, but I get tired of being diligent about everything. But you know what? That's part of the challenge of being a Christian. You have to be watchful. You've got to be careful in everything that you do. It gets tiresome. It really does. But that's a necessary part of our spiritual existence. This idea of guarding things, it's a military word. We have to guard it. Be careful what it sees, what it hears, what it processes. Because things come into the heart and then we send them out of the heart. The heart is sort of like the CPU on a computer. It's the guts of the thing. You have inside a computer, you've got this usually one main chip, and it does most of what everything goes on in the computer. If that's messed up, everything else is messed up. If it's messed up, you can't process information that comes in, and you can't send out instructions like you should. That's how your heart functions in human life. So watch your ears, watch your eyes, watch your heart. And then he says, watch your mouth. I wish he'd left that statement out. Put away from you a deceitful mouth and put devious speech far from you. Put away, he says, a deceitful mouth. Put away means to turn off or to put aside. That word deceitful is perverse, crooked. It's the word that a Hebrew person would use to describe a windy road. There's a few of those here in Kentucky. He says, you don't want to go down a windy road with your mouth. Now, you ever hear the expression straight talk? Well, and when I deal with people, I tell them straight. Well, that's exactly the opposite of this word. We should engage in straight talk with people, not deceitful talk, not crooked speech, not unreliable speech. We deal with one another in a straightforward way. So often, we send out mixed signals. So often, when we communicate with others, we tell them everything except what we mean. Why do we do that? Maybe we're afraid we'll hurt their feelings. Maybe we're afraid we'll damage the relationship. But Solomon says, put that kind of thing away. You deal with people straight. Now, there's a way to be tactful and loving when you deal with straight talk. Don't think that he's admonishing here just raw, aggressive, ugly speech. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about dealing with people honestly and straightforwardly, and yet with tact and love and that kind of thing. And he says, put devious speech. Devious means wayward. It means to deviate from something. Deviating from the way of the Lord, deviating from the way of wisdom, the way of prudence. He says that should not characterize what we are. At this point, we've kind of reached the turning point, and now he's not talking about what we take in, he's talking about what we put out. If you have been careful with what you see, and if you've been careful with what you hear, and if you've been careful about how you process this, now you be careful about how you express it. Think about how many sins in the Bible are associated with the mouth. Lies, deceit, slander, gossip, backbiting, railing. All kinds of words in the Bible describe things that we shouldn't do with our mouths. The problem is words, once they come out of your mouth, there's no way to get them back. Have you ever seen confetti in the wind? riding a fly that tells your kids to go pick up all the benefits. It'll never happen. It will never happen. You'll never be able to get those pieces of paper back once they're released. And here's another thing, if you've ever seen confetti in the wind, it goes places you never thought it could go. Your words will go places you never thought they could. Well, how did that person hear that? I don't know. Words happen. Words get out. That's how communication works. Sometimes we're not very wise in how we do that. Many years ago, this is back when I lived in Murray. Murray had a great public radio station connected with the university. And a lot of times when I'd be driving around town, I'd be listening to the radio station. I always enjoyed NPR in the afternoon, their news shows. And they had this really fascinating story one time. It was about a radio DJ. I don't remember his name. Don't remember anything about him. But I remember this. He had Tourette's syndrome. Now, with Tourette's syndrome, your body occasionally does things, or you make noises, or you have twitches. They call them tics, that you have absolutely no control over. And the interesting thing about this man is he had a particular kind, there's a particular type of Tourette's syndrome. It's called coprolalia. Coprolalia is when you just say things and you have no control over them. And it's usually racial slurs, sexist comments, vulgarities, cuss words. And the person has no control over it. In fact, they're usually horribly embarrassed by it. It's things that they would not normally say or do. But for some reason, their body just, and it's a very small percentage of people, but this coprolalia causes people just to blurt out horribly offensive things. Horribly offensive things. They have no control over it. But let me ask you this idea of washing your mouth. Suppose you had a disease where what you thought is exactly what you said at that moment. How would you like that? You think a bad thought about someone, and instantly it came out. And it all depended on what you thought. Wow. That's why we have to be careful about our words. Words can hurt. He says, watch your eyes in verse 25. Your eyes are for keeping direction. That's interesting. Did you notice back up in verse 21, eyes are used when it talks about taking things in, but eyes are used here to in the idea of guiding us and giving us a sense of direction. Notice in the text, he says, let your eyes look directly ahead and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. You know, when you're first learning to drive, I'll tell you what, that's a challenging thing. The main goal is watch what's in front of you. Now, as you get to be an experienced driver, yeah, you do need to pay attention to a few other things, but isn't it so easy? You're driving along, and that gets your attention over here, and that gets your attention over there. That's not good when you're driving. When we lived up in Iowa, you could tell a good tractor driver from a bad one. Because a lot of these tractor drivers, the good ones, they keep their eyes in front of them. They don't care what's behind them. Yeah, occasionally they look back. But every now and then, you'd be driving down the field and you'd see this little zigzag. You know what happened every time the tractor driver does this? They won't check out the road behind them. Uh-huh. You keep your eyes straight ahead. Your eyes are used for guidance. They're both receptors. They bring in information and they are directors. They tell you where to go. And you can train your eyes. All of you, my addiction to Polar Pop is well documented. And most days when I pass by Circle K, I have to stop and get my Polar Pop on the way to the office. Well, several years ago, they rearranged the layout of the building. And there's two ways to get to the Polar Pop section. I can come in the door and immediately turn right, and then you kind of veer to the left, and there's the Polar Pop. Or you can kind of take a little bit longer, less direct route, and you kind of come in. Well, here's the problem. When they rearranged all the girly magazines, when I went my usual way, I turned the corner, and there's all these women. Well, I made a decision. I'm going to go the other way it's interesting because when I go the other way, I'm actually closer to the magazines, but I never see them because I'm looking at the polar pop machine in all of its glory. And that helped me. Even training your eyes to see or not see things, it's all in the training. It's all in where you decide to put your eyes. They require, you want to fight lust, you want to fight envy, you want to fight so many things in your life. It all depends on what you tell your eyes to do and where you tell your eyes to see. Your eyes give you a sense of direction. Be careful what you take in and be careful what you allow yourself to see. So again, he says, watch your eyes. And then finally, watch your feet. They're the things that give you locomotion. He says in verse 26 and 27, watch the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Turn your foot from evil. Now, I've never been too scared to go down some back roads. My family used to hate it when we'd be driving around. Well, let's go this way and see what happens. Well, they all know. Usually what they want to do is go straight home. And there's some roads you turn down and you'll never get out of them. Not soon. This idea of not turning to the right or left, pretty common idea in biblical language. Do not turn to the right or to the left. In other words, stay on the path. The idea of life as a path or a way or a journey is one of the most common images in the Bible. And so what we have in the Bible is a pathway laid out before us. It's not that hard. Just stay on the path. The problem is we want to take those scenic routes. And the scenic routes get us into trouble. So he says, watch your feet. When I lived in Iowa, I learned you have to be very careful when you're walking across a farm field for many, many reasons. Sometimes there is organic content that you really just want to avoid. Sometimes there's holes in the ground that you may not expect. Sometimes there are critters out there that you'd really rather not encounter. I remember one time, my dad was a land surveyor for a power company. A lot of what he did the power company would be getting ready to lay a new power line. And it was always out in the country in the middle of nowhere. And he would go out and set the right of way, the area that the utility company had the right to use. But what it always involved was you'd be out in the middle of brush and undeveloped land, and so he had to measure a straight line. He and his partner had to measure a straight line, and they had to measure basically a straight path and mark it on either side. And a few times when I was a teenager, he'd take me out with him. I remember this one trip, we went out, we were near Paragould, Arkansas, and we were in this big meadow, and there's these lovely trees over here, and this power line's cutting straight across the street. He gave me a siding pole, and he said, well, let's go take that down the other side of the, so I'm tripping along. And I'm just walking along, and suddenly, things went very dark for a moment. I found an electric wire. It was not well marked. It was this gray wire against all the grass out in the field. There weren't any, you know, these days, everything's marked with neon flags. This wasn't marked with a neon flag. I had no idea. Now, the cattle knew where it was, which is why they were about 50 feet away. You watch your step. You watch where you go. Because your steps, if they're in the wrong direction, can lead you to places you don't want to be. So over and over again in this passage, he says, watch out. Be careful. Use your whole body. Use your whole self in the pursuit of wisdom and in the avoidance of sin and wickedness. This is the holistic approach to obedience. I came across a quotation. Oh, this was interesting. Oh, yeah, parts of it. Let's see. Oh, well, I guess I didn't put that last thing on there. Let me read this. This is from November 2004. Dr. Edward Miller. He is, since 1997, he is the dean of the John Hopkins University of Medicine, and he's the CEO of John Hopkins Medicine, which is the corporation that owns all that. He was at this symposium where they were talking about health issues and things people could do to improve their health. And this is a quotation. He was talking about heart disease. coronary heart disease. He said, if you look at people after coronary artery bypass grafting, 2 years later, 90% of them have not changed their lifestyle. And that's been studied over and over and over again. So we're missing some link in there. Even though they know they have a very bad disease and they know they should change their lifestyle, for whatever reason, they can't. Remember what Solomon said? Watch over your heart with all diligence. Some people have spiritual heart disease. And it's the same way. They know they have a disease. They know it's killing them. But for whatever reason, they don't do anything about it. Solomon's got the perfect prescription for it right here. Watch over your heart. What's your heart condition? How is your heart before God? What are the kinds of things you allow into your heart? What are the kinds of things that proceed from your heart? Solomon's very much concerned about that. Be careful what you take in. Be careful how you process it. And be careful what you let out. All of that reflects on your relationship to God. If there's any way we can help you here tonight in your spiritual life, we want to help you.